Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello everybody, welcome to That's Not Metal, your weekly rock and heavy metal podcast, and welcome to another edition of Hyperblasts, where we come at the week's news in bite-sized fashion. My name is Perrin Hayesh. Elliot is, I'm going to assume as we speak, in a queue at Download. Everyone else seems to be. But Sam Dignon is back, and after everything that you got up to in your time away, you came back and West Ham won the European trophy as well. How lovely for you.
Buzzing off that from last night, honestly. Like, being a West Ham fan is not easy, I'll tell you that. Like, this club, like, they it's highs and lows with West Ham, mostly lows, like, or middles. But somehow, we have gone and won a European trophy up the irons.
There you go. I'll hold you to that when we're talking about fucking the Final Frontier or whatever, whenever we get round to talking about the Iron Maiden special, whenever that appears. But you were away, first at Slam Dunk Festival, and then up to Edinburgh to see Bruce Springsteen, which I'm sure you're going to want to go off about in just a second. I got to see one of the bills of the year with Carcass bringing along Unto Others and Conjurer on their first UK club tour since the 90s, which was bananas. The Liverpool date obviously was a hometown show for Carcass as well, which was particularly special to be at, which they hadn't actually played a show like that since the Heartwork tour, and they brought Bill Steer's mum out and everything, and it was all a really nice time. The two support acts were, you know, both fascinating for how kind of like utterly different the sounds and vibes were for like such a top to bottom stacked bill, but nothing remotely similar really. Conjurer, I love how they just bully crowds into submission, like
every time.
Yeah, like, I've got to say, like, they've just recently come back from a US tour with Chemists as well, and I was seeing, like, some of my American, you know, mutuals getting to see Conjurer and being like, oh my fucking god, Conjurer, like, the best live metal band in the world. Imagine having to play after that and all that kind of thing. And it's like, yeah, we're quite lucky to just have them here opening bills like this and to be able to see, you know, the carnage that happens during Hadal, the sheer force of throat when Dan comes to the front of the stage, sans mic, and just, you know, bellows.
That bit is always amazing.
Yeah, like, in a support slot, they are still quite leaning heavily on the Maya stuff, but they opened with Suffer Alone, which was like a jump scare, so that was good. Unto Others, meanwhile, they keep touring with extreme metal bands when there's a sense that, like, half the people there are confused as to why the fuck someone's singing at them, the audacity, and going, huh! But, you know, scared of a little bit of melody. There's some definite head shakers and skeptics, but equally a gaggle of people up the front going mental for, like, Heroin and Nightfall. You know, great songs, great showmanship. Tweaking the set list just a little bit every time they come over here. After Download, which they got added last minute to along with Creeper, they're off to record a new album. And then I very much hope that the next time they come over here will be another headline tour, because I would love to see some, you know, Strength Side B stuff, which they just released as well, on top of course, any new material they have that's out by then. Sam, festival-wise, we've got a bunch of problems that we need to talk about. So first, why don't you take a moment to talk about The Boss?
Right, so yeah, Springsteen obviously is one of my, like, most inspired. I've been looking forward to this gig for ages, and this is why I've not done, like, a lot of festivals, because I was like, I'm not missing the next Springsteen tour. So couldn't get tickets for London. They flew out, so I was like, well, let's get a ticket for Edinburgh and go up a trek up there, because that's how much I was like, I need to see Springsteen. On stage at 7, no supports, 3-hour set. Like, this, like, and it was just incredible. Like, he's 73, and he has more, like, charisma and just, like, rock star stage presence than bands who collectively don't reach his age, in terms of just, like, the energy and enthusiasm he kind of exudes. It is insane how he can keep going that long. Like, even after a couple of days before, when he had a tumble on stage and kind of, like, carried on, like, he's just the most, like, incredible showman I've ever seen, just as, like, a performer. Setlist-wise, like, they're coming on, opening with No Surrender, and just, I was like, from the moment they opened with that, like, absolute banger, I was completely sold on it from the moment go. Every member of his, like, huge band of, like, 12 13 musicians on stage with him, like each coming out individually at the start to kind of like get their moment. As a 3-hour set, you would expect there is going to be a little bit of filler in the middle where they kind of get into like a slight sort of like jam session thing with someone like the more kind of like let the band have the moments. And I've discovered Springsteen gets away with things I would not let other bands and artists get away with, because I was totally in on the band having their jam session. I was like, yeah, you go and have your keyboard solo, rock out on that keyboard, mate. Like, let's go. Because at the same time, Springsteen is so enthusiastic in him encouraging the band to kind of like play. He's still like in the first half, still dropping hits like The Promised Land and just stuff off his most recent album, Ghosts. That was incredible. It was like track two. Like, really just awesome set list. The back half of the set list, though, which was when it got really sort of spectacular, where it was just...
I saw like the fucking like 9-song encore or whatever it was. And it was I think
like two bands doing more than 2 songs encore, you're pushing it. Nah, Springsteen, do your 7-song encore, mate. Do it.
Some people are going,
like when you're opening your encore with Born in the USA and then going straight into Born to Run, it's the best moment of my life. Like the second half of the set list was genuinely, like the final 90 minutes was the best thing I've ever seen live. I can honestly say that. It was completely just, I was with Mark as well, was with me for that. And the two of us were just like happy, dancing, singing. It was genuinely incredible. And like that he ends it after doing like the most like raucous version of 10th Avenue Freeze Out, or like giving the entire band their introductions. Ends it with him with an acoustic guitar doing a song off the latest album. Not the covers album, the last original album. And how he can make this huge stadium show feel really intimate when he's doing a moment like that, and kind of having connected with members of the crowd. And I was quite far back, but it still felt like, it didn't feel like I was, you know, way off in the distance watching his tiny little speck. I could feel his performance, his kind of like connection with the crowd. And it was really like impressive in that way, and felt like he genuinely clearly still loves doing this and is going to carry on doing it until he can't. But I was so glad I've been able to finally get to see it. My dad, who is like the reason I like Springsteen, was getting competitive with me about it. So, I've seen him twice, and I've seen him play The River in Full. I was like, yes, Dad, we bought you tickets to that one. You don't need to, you know, remind me. But yeah, just one of the best, probably the best show I've ever seen, just in terms of like, not even stage show. The stage show is him and the band performing, and they are just so engaging, and it just absolutely incredible for 3 hours. I wasn't bored for a second.
Love that. Love to hear that. Slam Dunk. We're going to be kind of, you know, it's not, we're not doing a Slam Dunk review episode. We'll be brief through it. Very quickly, let's say top 5 sets. What were the best things you saw at Slam Dunk in brief?
Best things I saw at Slam Dunk? Oh, this is quite, do you know what we'll start with? Number 5, Scene Queen.
It felt like everyone, I can't remember who was on at the same time as them, but it felt like, from what I saw, everyone went to go see Scene Queen, and whoever was on at the same time struggled.
Look, what I will say is there's a couple of little kinks she needs to work out as a live act. There's a bit too much reliance on backing tracks. She's only got a drummer and a guitarist.
Yeah.
But she's also still only got 2 EPs, and it's a very kind of new act. But like her as a performer, her stage presence, her charisma again, so engaging, like so charming. During 18 plus on the following allegations against member, the crowd shouted out the band name, and you could like quite audibly hear it, and that was a fun moment. But yeah, Scene Queen was fantastic.
Did see that.
Creeper, like, of course, Creeper, nice. Just absolutely incredible. Bit of an odd set list, but at the same time, Cry to Heaven, which, you know, like you were both raving about on the review show last week.
Yeah.
That live, absolutely incredible. They are now, like I say, in their cool 80s vampire era, where they're all in leather jackets, like strutting about the stage, proper rock star shit. I don't want to say this was one of the biggest surprises, but 4 Years Strong were absolutely incredible as well. This was when I had just the run of like 4 Years Strong straight to the Menzingers. But yeah, 4 Years Strong were awesome. Like, I've been waiting a while to see them again since that last album really kind of got me back on board with like loving what they're doing. And they just came on, and it was just so like catchy and euphoric, but mean and like hefty at the same time, which I think is one of the things that has always been great about 4 Years Strong, is they are like an actual heavy pop punk band. The new song sounded great. The hits off of like the early albums sounded awesome. That was typically brilliant. Yellow Card Playing Ocean Avenue was great. But my number 2 set of the day, I just want to give a quick shout, because Yellow Card Playing Ocean Avenue was incredible. Enter Shikari as a headliner was just euphoric in terms of like I was with my mates. We were just having the time of our lives, singing along, dancing, watching the spectacle that Shakira were putting on. Kiss for the Whole World, Please Set Me on Fire. They sound incredible live. Bloodshot, so quite a bit of new stuff. Still, you know, dropping Labyrinth and Anything Can Happen off of Take the Skies. A real nice career-spanning set list. The only thing that kind of got shortchanged a bit was The Spark. But they were incredible. But
does that mean number one is Kids in Glass Houses?
No, I didn't see Kids in Glass Houses. Because they clashed with my number one pick,
okay,
which is my favourite band, which is The Menzingers.
Oh, right. There you go.
Yeah, like, it was one of those where I was like, I could watch 15 minutes of Kids in Glass Houses and then have to go the entire length of the festival site, squeeze into the tent that's a real pain in the ass to get into, which we will probably cover in some of the logistic problems that Slam Dunk have kind of endured. Or I could go watch 4 Year Strong straight into The Menzingers without a break in the tent, and I was just like, I'm just going to go do that. And The Menzingers were the best band at the festival because The Menzingers came on and played The Menzingers songs. Like, they can't really say much else, apart from they played a brand new song, which sounded amazing.
That's nice.
So the album is done from the sounds of things, and we should probably be hearing more from it soon. But yeah, just the best songs. They are just the coolest band. Menzinger's awesome.
There you go. And I'm very glad to hear, you know, that thing, because that gives a positive impression of the day, right? Like, there were awesome bands, awesome sets were played, you know, memories were forged, all that good stuff you want from a festival. However, I was not at Slam Dunk. My girlfriend was at Slam Dunk. She went to Slam Dunk North, which I have gathered is even worse than what you may have
North
seen.
Sounded way worse than what, like, yeah.
Slam Dunk, again, as an outsider, just going off what I saw online, what I heard from her, etc. Slam Dunk a couple weeks ago was marred by, I think, the most volatile reaction to a festival that I have personally ever seen in the rock scene in the UK. Like, I don't remember anything. Like, the
I was getting shit for saying I enjoyed it. People were giving me a bit of stick for saying I had a good time.
Yeah, like, I don't remember seeing anything like the uproar that we saw around Slam Dunk a couple of weeks ago. And now, as we are talking about this, we're currently seeing it happen again with the download car parking situation.
Car park seems to be the consistent, the real consistent
thing.
Who
called that being the fucking theme of the summer, being inadequate car parking? Quickly on the download front, again, this is happening as we are speaking, so we will yet see how it turns out. You've got to imagine that at least part of it is due to the extra day on download, and maybe a sense that obviously yesterday, as we're recording this, was Wednesday, everyone turning up for that, as opposed to the people.
Download normally, you know, half turn up on Wednesday, half turn up on Thursday, festival kicks off Friday, so it's kind of split. Whereas this year, there's still obviously been a split of people turning up on the Wednesday and the Thursday, but I imagine far more people turning up on the one day is meant that day was real, like.
But then we're also seeing, I've seen a lot of people, again, this is happening at the moment, so we'll see how the dust settles, but I'm just kind of, you know, it's rooting through the fucking, the tweets that are getting out there of what's going on. A lot of people talking about being directed to various car parks, being told to follow signs, but the signs aren't there, or, you know, not well, signed themselves, or whatever. So people are just driving around for ages, getting lost. We've also heard from Elliot, who said that a number of the people who's come to the festival with have been unable to have their wristbands scanned because of a lack of Wi-Fi on the site, which I'm presuming means the scanner's going down. Again, I don't exactly know what is going on. We will hear from some of these things when we go to talk about Download Festival after the event. But it's very fucking weird to see, again, like 2 weeks apart, these repeated things suddenly happening. But
like, I can't like say to her, but from my experience, Slam Dunk South was the online reaction, apart from the car park, was exaggerated. On site, with the exception of trying to get in and out of the Kerrang tent, because they only had one side of this tent open and it was one of the alternating stages, that was a real choke point. And the food vendors, depending on the time of day you went, there were long queues. But my thing was, I don't see how me and all my friends were collectively so lucky that we all managed to avoid queuing more than a couple of minutes for water, not queuing for a beer, queuing 20 minutes tops for food. Like, I think there were people who just, using a little bit of initiative, you could have avoided the worst of these festival problems, like not using the toilets and the water right by the main stage where it's the busiest, going to one of the ones on the other side. Again, at North, from the sounds of things, North was a complete...
Well,
mess,
the car parking situation, I think, certainly even at South, sounded like it was...
Yeah, that's the one that was like, I'm not going to defend.
Yeah, which I don't imagine you will have driven there.
I got the train, because I had no trouble with the train.
By the sound of it, there were issues with people, essentially, they kind of let everyone into the general car parks, meaning that people who had paid for specific allocated parking.
So at South, they were allowing people to pay on the day.
Yeah, and that seemed like... And, you know, again, I saw a lot of people who feel like they've just kind of gave up and turned away, because if you're circling around a car park for fucking 5 hours, like, missing most of what you want to see, that's not good, you know, at all. As said, again, I can't speak to either of these things. South, which happened the day before, didn't it? So South happened,
yeah,
and there was talk online of like, oh, this isn't going well, right? And then North happened, and it fucking doubled, right? And so... Yeah. It seems like that was both a build-up of the kind of just the feeling around it, and also the fact that North seemed to have double the problems from it. The food queues, by the sounds of it, at North were fucking serious. And that
sounds like that was really...
Yeah, bad. And there was a picture of kind of the food stalls seemed to be all kind of a similar kind of almost like marketplace area, and there was a picture that someone had taken of just like kind of a sea of heads, and it looked like the photos of like the mall outside Buckingham Palace for the coronation. It was like there was no clear like cues of like where, you know, if you're queuing for, let's say, this burger van, whatever, you go in this one. It just looked like a mass of people with no kind of organization, and it looked like something. I think I heard as well that it's like almost feels like you could get crushed in there, and did not look good at all. My girlfriend also, again, her particular anecdote of like everyone has their one story of the thing that happened closest to them, whatever. She said she was queuing for food, and she was queuing for a long time going up to this one particular stand, and the person behind her, one of the security guards or whatever, came over and said, "Oh, you are essentially like the cutoff point. No one who is like after you
is going to get food,
because the transactions on the card machines had reached like a maximum amount. It was like, we can't process any more transactions. So if you were behind essentially my girlfriend in this queue for this stand, and you've been queuing there for God knows how fucking long, you know, half an hour, whatever it might be, you could be queuing there for that whole time and then be told, oh, actually, you can't come and get this food, and then you'll have to go and queue somewhere else for even more time, you know." Fucking, you know, ridiculous state of affairs. The urinals apparently burst, and it was like a river of piss going through. Like, it seemed like carnage.
Yeah, like I said, North and the Sound of Things did seem like a lot of the complaints were very legit, and it sounded like it was a real mess. South, I can honestly just go from my own experience. It wasn't perfect. There were definite problems, but I think, I don't know if this is, some people have like, this is their first time leaving the house in like 2 years to go to a big event, and they've just kind of not taken the time to plan things out properly. I don't know, but South wasn't as bad as some people.
Yeah, I'm not going to dismiss again, because there is very much the possibility that people experience things just kind of out of, you know, your peripheral view. But like, it seemed like South had mild problems, and then North had serious problems. And yeah, we had a question today about whether this is like poor event organization, or if it is, as you say, the adjusted expectations of festival goers kind of post pandemic. You know, not having this for a while, but. We've had a couple summers now with festivals coming back, and nothing like this has happened in terms of the backlash to a single event. We didn't have anything like this to this scale in 2021 or 2022. So it feels like, you know, there's no smoke without fire. And the statement that they made, first of all, of being like, you know, we acknowledge our problems and so on, everyone just fucking like went insane on it and like threw it right back out them. And then they had to open up like a feedback survey of essentially complaints, which, again, I've not seen a festival in our, you know, sort of sphere doing. It seemed I've never seen anything quite like it.
Well, like with the whole that their statement, I'm like, what else were people expecting Slam Dunk to say other than like, we, you know, we were told we were up to standards, we weren't over capacity and all that. If that's what they've been told, that's what they've been told. I think people wanted to be told they're getting a refund.
Yeah. I mean, again, if you are someone who fucking got stuck in a car park for 6 hours, maybe you probably should be entitled to a refund, like, you know?
Yeah, I know, no, I agree with that. But there's some weird things. I think part of it, I think, is, you know, these festivals are probably trying to cut costs and find little, like, shortcuts where they can cut costs a little bit. And they were also downloading Slam Dunk. This is the first time they've been sold out, like in God knows how long.
Right.
Like, Slam Dunk at the new sites, it's the first time they've ever been sold out, so that's more people than ever. Download is obviously completely sold out, and I can't remember the last time I saw that happen. So that's the volume of people that they're dealing with. I think it's somewhere in the middle of the festival organization. They are definitely slipping up somewhere. I don't know if it's where they've been cutting costs or just genuine, just out of the blue mishaps. Who knows? But yeah, I think some people might just need to, like, I think some people are just not planning things out, maybe, or like if everyone's going to the same place at, you know, the peak time, it's going to be busier. But
yeah,
I think
it's early days for download right now. I do hope that after this initial rush that we've seen, it clears up and people are able to have a great rest of their weekend.
I mean, download might be lucky in that it's all happened on the day where there's no bands and people have just been sat in a car for that.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's still happening. Again, it's still been happening today as we've been talking about it. The download Twitter account's just been constantly updating with travel information and stuff. I hope people are able to get into for Metallica tonight, right? Again, we'll hear back about this. Slam Dunk, I think a lot of people aren't going to go back, right? Like, they've had it particularly...
I think people will. I think people will all talk and they'll go back. It depends what the lineup is next year.
Certainly there were some people, I think. If, you know, particularly maybe if they went to North and it was particularly serious or whatever, like, and that was their experience. I think, you know, whether some of it is exaggeration, I still think that there are clear issues that Slam Dunk need to address if they're going to,
absolutely,
you know, kind of improve the thing going forward. So that's the events of the last couple of weekends, I suppose. Again, we'll see what goes down with Download. News proper starts with something that is very, very bizarre. It's whatever the hell is going on with Slipknot right now. Because, I mean, this almost seems like something that we're almost recording a day too early to truly...
We're talking about developing stories.
Yeah, but like...
that happening.
So the first thing that happened is that Clown announced that he wasn't going to be part of this European tour that is currently happening as we speak because he's staying at home in order to care for some sick family. And that is, you know, it's not a band-shaking announcement, right? Like, obviously, it's completely understandable. We absolutely, you know...
Personal lives come first.
Yeah, obviously, we absolutely wish our best to Sean and, you know, the surrounding Korean family and so on. But you imagine, you know, when it comes around to Slipknot doing new music, whatever, eventually he's going to return to the band. This isn't a long-term kind of issue for the future of the band. The next day, as far as I can tell, they announced in a very sudden, very short, very lacking in...
Blunt
much
to the point.
Yeah, lacking in information statement, announced that Craig Jones, the long-time sampling member of Slipknot, Pinhead himself, is parting ways with the band. He is an original member. He's been in the band for, I think, 27 years was the stat I saw earlier. One of, you know, the handful of original members who were there going back, which you got to remember, like, it's even Jim Root isn't technically an original member. Even Corey Taylor isn't technically an original member. Like, Craig, I think, you know, probably played on Mate Feed Kill Repeat. That's how far back we are going with this. And out of nowhere, this statement that doesn't say anything. It was just, we've parted ways with Craig Jones. Race. In a way that was so sudden. And you've got to remember, this European tour is happening now. They played their first show yesterday. This statement came out hours before they played the first show of the European festival run. Extremely fucking bizarre. You would expect that to happen, you know, beforehand.
Before the tour takes off,
and then again,
yeah,
we're going to talk about what this might mean for Slipknot, whatever, in terms of losing Craig Jones, whatever, in a second. But the story doesn't stop there, because then, even stranger, that statement was then deleted from all the social media pages and just vanished. And everything that we saw for just, yeah, we're partnering with Craig Jones, was no longer there anymore. But then, what they uploaded in its place was a photograph of a new masked member. What the fuck does any of this mean?
I have no idea. It has been a weird, turbulent time for Slipknot. Like, I mean, they're a band who are no strangers to, you know, like, turbulent kind of, like, moments in their career. But this one just feels so just bizarre in how it's all playing out without any explanation, right in the middle of, like, or right at the start of a European tour that's kicking off as it's going. You know, it's not even, like, the build-up to the tour.
No.
You know, they're rolling out,
they played the show members, like, yesterday, the day they made the announcement. They're playing Download on, what, Sunday, is it? Saturday or Sunday?
Sunday.
And so, I mean, obviously, Clown not being there for this particular tour, again, completely understandable. We hope to see him return in future, but it would be, I guess, he is such a huge part of the live show. You can't imagine him not hitting the keg on one side of the stage. Mm. It will be fascinating to see who they have, I guess, in his place, whether that percussionist slot is filled or whatever. Kind of when it comes to, again, the download experience and everything. But Craig Jones, I mean, the very sudden nature, you would imagine that he would have been on this tour until, I don't know, again, but like, if anyone has footage or whatever of last night's show, again, it feels like we're very early days in terms of actually being able to make a judgment on this. We're waiting to see if there'll be footage come out of these shows or see if they've got behind them, because the fact that it happened so, like, again, hours, minutes even, close to a tour beginning is the most strange thing about this. But then also the fact that they deleted the statement, showed a new member, but after deleting the statement, this is stranger than when, you know, just Chris was out of the band or Jerry was out of the band or whatever, because at least that felt like a not on the fly decision, right?
Yeah, that felt like, you know, this has been just discussed and whatever.
Yeah,
they've parted ways. This is now just kind of like I say, minutes as
shocking,
close as you can
but you
be
can
to
trust the information you're given, which I don't know what the fuck we're doing right now.
Yeah, like again, like I feel like maybe tomorrow we'll know more. Like, who knows? There is obviously other bits of this puzzle coming out as and when it develops. Like, there might, as we're recording this right now, we might come off and find out there's even more shocking surprise news. But the project Craig Jones is just the weirdest part of it, because it just, like, it was just so blunt in the statement. There was no elaboration
at
all.
So I almost don't want to comment too heavily because we have so little information. In terms of if he is at the band, which again, I don't entirely trust. I don't know if he is at the moment because the statement was deleted. But if he is at the band, that is another one of the original nine gone. It is someone who I think more so perhaps than when Chris Fenn was at the band. This is someone who you detect their presence quite heavily on the recorded output.
Visually as well, just he's got obviously one of the most
I mean that's similar to Chris. I mean more like, again, particularly like the last couple of Slipknot albums, it feels like we've spoken about the input of like Craig and Sid,
the electronic, yeah
quite a lot, particularly again on like the, you know, the last record and some of the kind of moodiest thing that they were doing there and so on. It's not like a singer, right, where there is like the most detectable obvious voice, where if that's changed, that's a very very obvious thing that maybe what Craig Jones does, they can find someone of a similar talent to do without too much kind of fanfare. But it's certainly like his contributions to Slipknot material should not be overlooked, even if he's always been probably the most anonymous member of Slipknot. And if they weren't to, like, if this was just to be a kind of like, you know, we just strip that element out of the sound, you would certainly notice it. And I wouldn't expect them to do that for that reason. But certainly musically, it feels like it's a departure that it's a space that needs to be filled, right? Else you're gonna notice it.
Yeah.
But God knows what's going on in terms of the reasoning for this, what's happening with it. Again, news to come. It was a very, very bizarre thing. And that's also not it with the Slipknot information. And the fact that I suppose they're doing this simultaneously with the Craig Jones kind of announcement just makes it all feel bizarrer. But again, within fucking, you know, hours of all that going down, they were had launched a new teaser website, which was kind of teasing has a video on it. I have seen things floating around the internet that suggest there is going to be an EP dropping.
That's what I've seen. Yeah,
dropping tonight at midnight. I have seen the Adderall EP, which contains kind of tracks and, you know, deconstructed elements and stuff from the song Adderall, which is hilarious because I love Adderall, right? Like, I think it's a great song. I thought it was pressing play on that Slipknot album and being greeted with that was one of the most, like, surprising and engaging kind of moments from a large band like that that we've had in the last couple of years. And I think it's a really great song. But it's all the backlash that had happened around that last Slipknot album, Adderall was the poster child song for it, right? Like, it was the most different song on the album, and it was literally the first thing you heard when you press play, and people fucking threw their toys at the pram about Adderall. And I think it's so funny, particularly when, again, we've been discussing the strange stability of their set list and the fact that they haven't actually been playing very much of that album at all, despite the fact they were really talking the talk in interviews of like, we love this album, we don't care what anyone else thinks or whatever, but they weren't representing it necessarily. To then suddenly do this switch around again and release a EP based around the most hated song on the album, if that is indeed what this turns out to be come tomorrow.
Yeah, like, I just, again, like, I'm down for that. I think,
not
take, do what is creatively fulfilling for you, but it is just, like I say, it's turbulent in a way that you don't often, like, see for a big band so publicly, in a way, where, like, again, they like the, you know, the album gets a bit of a kick in, they back it up, but then it's not in the live sets, but now they're pushing the most sort of left field track on there. I'm finding difficult things to say about this, because I'm like, I don't know what's actually coming from it. We'll see tomorrow, I guess. We'll more on this next week.
Yeah, I mean, I guess for me, again, I want to see some footage of the shows that are happening this week to see what's going on with, you know, who is in Clown's place for this, but also what's happening with Craig. I want to see if there's any fucking developments on why this statement was taken down, all of this kind of stuff. It's so up in the air at the moment. I guess just in the kind of the long term, if Craig is gone, that is something that needs to be addressed. And I just want to throw to you one last time before we move on about, what do you think about some of the backlash that we've seen to, I saw you commenting on it earlier online about kind of, I guess, Slipknot and some of the turmoil that they've had.
I'm like, I know the last one was divisive, but I don't, what I'm seeing a remarkable amount of Slipknot should just call it a day because of, like, they've lost so many members now. I mean, two of those members have died. Like, you can't really, like, you know, I know Joey was obviously out of the band before that, but this is still, you know, that happens. I don't see why, like, to me, I kind of jokingly made a remark, was it the Corey Taylor solo record that has just done that much damage to their reputation? Because, like, that was bad. But, like, I still think that Last Night album is the most interesting move they've made in a good while, because it was just different. But, yeah, like, I understand, you know, when this is a band, you know, the Nine, that was, like, the thing for so long.
Yeah.
When that is down to the Five, like, I can understand why people might be a bit like, well, it, like, feel a bit touchy about it. But I don't see why some haven't earned, you know, at least some degree of trust. And again, like, you look at the set list. I'm not going to go into the spoilers, but the set list they've pulled out of this first show back.
Yeah, I should say, when we're talking about stability, the one they did play yesterday was fucking awesome.
The set list they, like, pulled out is fucking amazing right now. So, like, when we're talking about, you know, someone who can often play it a bit safe for their set lists, they're doing that. I'm like, that's really cool. So I'm willing to give, you know, I think they have earned the trust to be like, to weather out, again, turbulent periods where they can then come back and still do something really impressive. I've not got my knives out for them in the slightest, like I've seen a lot of people do, just because members are leaving. You know, that happens with a lot of bands, and some bands, you know, carry on stronger. Some bands, it does make a big creative, like, difference. I guess we'll see what the next sort of thing comes from, whether this like lineup change has a big impact. But yeah, I'm a bit baffled by the amount of, like, venom and backlash at Slipknot at the moment.
Yeah, we'll pick up on this a little bit later because we've got a question. But some other band departures, I guess, that have happened at the moment. Rob Caggiano is out of Volbeat. He's been there for 10 years, and he tends to drift. He sure will be back with someone soon. But you know, notable there, they are a big band. In Flames bassist has left, and this is mental. Liam Wilson, formerly of the Dillinger Escape Plan, is filling in for them on bass live on this summer run, which I like In Flames.
I might inject some energy into them.
Yeah, but like, imagine, like, he can sleepwalk this, right? Like, holy yeah. Shit. And also, something that I've literally just seen that's come through, like, since we started recording, is that Derek Grant has left the Alkaline Trio, the founding drummer, I believe.
That is news to me.
Yeah, like, again, it's literally, I'm looking at this now, it's happened while we're recording. He's talking about the demands of being in a touring band, and just wanting to take a step back for his mental health and everything, presumed to be the family. Again, very, very kind of on the fly news there, but yeah, that is notable. I suppose we'll see what happens with the Alkaline Trio, who are currently down to an Alkaline Duo, going forward. Let's talk about some music. Teenage Wrist have announced their new album. This is, I think, the most exciting one this week. Yep. Teenage Wrist's album is going to be out on, I believe, August the 4th. And they've released a song from it. They've been releasing a few singles, right?
This is, like, I think, the third single from it, technically.
I hadn't been listening to any of the others because there was no album announcement or anything, but I did listen to this one. Kind of impressions to date of what Teenage Wrist have been putting out there?
Yeah, no, they've been, I don't know if I've loved any of these singles as much as I love that last album right now, because, I mean, that last album was so good. But, you know, it's still more quality music from Teenage Wrist. I think the latest single is probably the most impressive.
New song, Still Love, I really like. I think it's got a great use of texture. Like, the guitars sound really strong.
Totally.
And powerful vocals as well, which is something that a lot of these bands don't really have. So this is a good song.
And it's a nice contrast with... I'm not super familiar with Soft Cult, who are the guest sort of thing on it. But like, it's a nice contrast between him having the more power vocal and then her vocals being a lot more sort of wistful and dreamy. It's a nice kind of mesh between the two. But yeah, like, really luscious, dreamy, like, typical thing you'd expect from Teenage Wrist. It's definitely kind of put me on like, yeah, the second half of this year is shaping up nicely for my sort of albums right now.
Yeah, that is exciting. Ithaca have announced their first US tour. It's quite brilliantly called the Y'all Fear Us tour, and the poster has a large orange cowboy hat photoshopped onto Jimmy Lehrer in the dress. If you are one of our American listeners and you've been waiting to see Ithaca since the release of They Fear Us, or if you've never listened to them, you should go and see them anyway, because they're bloody brilliant. I look forward to the video of them playing the St. Vitus in NYC. Looks fucking great. And also over here, this is awesome. Municipal Waste.
This is a good time.
Yeah, have announced a UK and Ireland headlining tour, and they are bringing along Gel and Undeath, which is for a mixed bill of, like, you know, three different kind of bands there. But what a fucking night out. What a party.
Yeah. Like, legitimately, like, you got a real kind of, like, hardcore punk, scrappy sort of, like, minute-long songs. You've got Undeath, who are one of the best kind of new death metal bands.
And should be said as well, Undeath are probably the most fun live band of the current crop of death metal. Like, they just have
they seem like the ones who've got the fun vibes.
They have the best vibe, so it'll be perfect for that.
Yeah, I imagine, like, Joe, I've not chosen bad. They've had, unfortunately, had to pull out of Outbreak.
Yeah, well, here's your chance to do it.
Here's my chance to see him, so yeah. And then Municipal Waste, who, again, I've seen Municipal Waste, like, I mentioned this when I saw them with Great. You just need to see him every now and then just to top up on that, like,
I'll take a headline, so I haven't seen a headline in fucking forever.
Yeah, no, but I'm not even. I'm like, that them headline with this sort of support bill, that's really just a good time. And I'm so down to go and just headbang, stomp about and have a party.
Yeah, and it's not a surprise either, but good on Municipal Waste for bringing out some really, like, you know, exciting contemporary
young bands, yeah.
Bands who are obviously, you know, not too long ago, that would have been them in those kind of positions. But, like, they're, you know, they know what to do. That sounds like a fucking great time. And then the last piece of news I want to talk about is the news that the Iron Sheik passed away, which is obviously wrestling news rather than rock and metal news. But people may remember, possibly my favourite news story of the time that I've been doing TNM was the time when Shaggy 2 Dope of Insane Clown Posse ran on stage and drop kicked someone in Limp Bizkit while they were playing, and it ignited a feud which you may remember was solved, and the peace was made by none other than the Iron Sheik, with a tweet which read, "The Shaggy 2 Dope, you are a good man, but your drop kick is fucking drizzling shits. Even worse than the Brian Blair. Also, DJ Lethal is my brother. I don't like to see my brothers fight Bubba." So, as someone who knows nothing about wrestling, the Iron Sheik is someone whose presence I always
he's an incredible character.
Enjoyed.
All I'll just say is, fuck Hulk Hogan.
Fuck the Hulk Hogan.
Fuck the Hulk Hogan. He's a jabroni.
I even made him get Ebola, is a video I seem to remember. So yeah, you know, an incredible character who sometimes crossed over into the worlds of rock and metal. Drizzling shits forever. Rest in peace, the Iron Sheik. Questions. Alex Atherton kicks us off saying, inspired by listening to the Oathbreaker special and discovering Eros and Teros, what are the great lost predecessor albums? I'm talking about the albums before the classic, which may be almost as good, but now get overlooked. Power Metal by Pantera. No, I'm joking, although I do enjoy that album. I mean, I'd throw Maelstrom into this as well. Like I said, it's almost like Maelstrom is almost to Eros and Teros what Eros and Teros is to Rhea, where it's like they had a habit of releasing albums that immediately made their last really great album be kind of unfairly forgotten. Thinking about other specials we've done, like Portrait of the Goddess by Bleeding Through, Greatest Love Song 666, maybe the self-titled Killswitch Engage a little bit. I think Static Prevails by Jimmy Eat World before, like, they began their real run was one that we really went hard on in that regard.
Similar thing, but Chaos Sphere, in a way, like, kind of like, I don't know if that, like, again, I'm not assuming the Michigan, but I feel like that's kind of like the last of, like, the earlier Michigan bands before they're kind of one of what seems like the real classics. But like,
it'd be more like Contradictions Collapse, which is I like it. It's not anywhere near as good as, like, you know, the six Meshuggah records that follow it. But, like,
I mean, the big one that immediately sprung to mind for me is Daybreaker by
Architects. I was going to question them about that. I was going to be like, would you put Daybreaker into this camp?
I would absolutely put Daybreaker into this category, because, like, that was, you know, after the Trouble, that was the Here and Now. Daybreaker was the kind of, like, the album that was, it was kind of like, oh, you know, they're doing what they're good at again. They're back staying in the ship a little bit. But I think, you know, the album's got These Colours Don't Run on it.
Yeah, that's far and away the standout.
Alpha Omega. But I think there's, like, a load of really cool stuff on that record that gets overlooked. And then Lost Forever Lost Together was kind of like the start of the classic Architects run that we know and love today. But yeah, I think Daybreaker is definitely one. And the only other one that kind of sprung to mind, which again, maybe because it's sandwiched between two absolute like 10 out of 10 classics, but Rented World by the Menzingers, I think is a kind of like a bit like,
yeah,
people forget how good that album is. That album,
no, I agree. I think I was thinking about, there are a bunch of albums that you can always have as like sandwich albums, right? Like,
yeah,
not quite this question, but things that are sandwiched between two like huge records like that one is, that maybe don't get that love. I think that would be a good example of that for sure. The two big ones that came to mind for me for this is, one is Still Life by Opeth, which is my favourite Opeth album. I think I've settled that one here many times, but that comes right before Blackwater Park, which itself then leads on to, you know, Deliverance and Damnation and Ghost Reveries and everything. That's like the real classic Opeth run that everyone talks about, but Still Life comes in right before Blackwater Park and for me is the one. And really, The Link by Gojira, which is released,
yeah, actually huge shout,
before From Mars to Sirius. I mean, Terra Incognita is a really great record as well, but The Link I fucking love, and it is so blisteringly heavy but so awesome and intricate in and you know, only something Gojira could have made. I like it probably, I mean, certainly more than Fortitude, perhaps on a similar level, if not slightly more than Magma. Like, I think that particular record I love. I would love to see them put more stuff from it back in the set list, you know, bring Indians back, do the full Song of Remembrance, not just the little breakdown at the end, all that kind of stuff. That for me is definitely one of my number one shouts for this. The Harvest Floor by Cattle Decapitation, which comes before Monolith and Humanity, which then starts kind of, you know, the real, the classic Cattle Run.
Yeah, Monolith and Humanity is where I kind of check in with.
Yeah, like The Harvest Floor is an amazing record, and it's more than, you know, Humanure kind of, you know, slop or whatever, which I love that as well. But The Harvest Floor, I think, is a really brilliant, underrated record. Manifest Decimation definitely set some of the stage for Nightmare Logic and kind of probably deserves a little bit more kind of love in hindsight.
I mean, I said that I Am King, like,
I
think, I mean, we kind of drew that thing with Eros and Teros, and like, I kind of compared it to Eros and Teros on that special.
I think Showbiz by Muse is like a fucking unbelievable, like, slightly progressive alternative rock album that comes before, you know, Origin Symmetry and the rest.
Yeah, I think you're right there.
I think one of the big ones which the world kind of collectively came around on is Soulside Journey by Dark Throne, which is kind of the lost death metal album before they turned into a black metal album and started what people know them for. But then, you know, years later, people were like, hang on, that one death metal album they released was brilliant. Elliot's Not Here to Say in Casino Out. So I'll say that for him.
I should say that. I love it. Yeah, and I mean, I know Relationship of Command is one of my favorite albums ever. But yeah,
I think we did the Refused Album Club as well, which was a similar deal. I was like, not that anyone's arguing that's as good as Shape of Punk to Come, but, you know, interesting conversation to be had. I mean, there's loads I could throw out. I mean, like, my favorite Halloween album has probably always been Walls of Jericho, which comes slightly before they kind of really defined, you know, power metal as we know it. Pale Folklore by Agarlock before The Mantle. White Tomb by Order of Plagues before Mammal. Maybe all of the pre-Slaughter of the Soul at the Gates stuff, like Terminal Spirit Disease. Loads there. And on to the last question here. Is Chris Beals Lacey says, with the sun out, what are the best summer albums? And this, I would just say, that is a question for our summer album roulettes that I'm sure we'll be bringing back, you know, sooner rather than later. So, speaking of that very place, we've still got our album club pack there, where we spoke about Nine Inch Nails, The Broken EP, Baroness's Yellow and Green, The Hotelier, Satyricon. We've still got, as mentioned as well, the 4-hour Oathbreaker special, where we gave a definitive critical history of one of the greatest heavy bands of our lifetimes. Over the summer, we will be bringing back the roulettes. We will be bringing back the A to Z of Awful. We have just opened up a poll over there as well for patrons with a handful of band special considerations that we have. And people have been voting, giving us an idea of what band specials we are going to be undertaking in the second half of 2023 also. So you can go and take a look at that. Next up there for this weekend is recording our T&M Does Horror episode on the works of one Ari Aster, which... I don't know if many of you have actually seen Beau Is Afraid, because the wider, you know, talk around it has been understandably, I think, very lessened compared to the wildfire successes of Hereditary and Midsommar. But part of that is that you will never see a fucking movie like it again. And we are gonna go all in on why, and at the same time give the full deep dive treatment to Hereditary and Midsommar, those earlier two movies that we have given.
I feel like this is going to be our longest. Like, if you thought the Robert Eggers one was long. Well, this could be our...
I don't know, but I put him in a similar ballpark. You know, we did this treatment for The Witch and everything. We've done it for Get Out and Nope and Us. And we're going to try and gauge why these movies have become like the poster children of modern horror. So that is at patreon.com/thatsnotmetal. Releases for this Friday. It's a very small week this week, which is a good thing because every big band released their album last week and I've still not got round to fully listening to all them.
I mean, I just feel I need to catch up from last week. The Einar thingy from Leprous, I still want to check that out.
Yeah, the Avengers album is fucking... The Avengers Sevenfold album is fucking...
Yeah, trying to wrap my head around that.
It's crackers, isn't it? To be discussed in our upcoming reviews. But today, the big one that we probably will be reviewing in the upcoming episode as well is Godflesh's Purge, their first record in, I think, 6 years. I'm excited to review Godflesh. The other one that I would really recommend and shout out is there's a death metal band called Torture Rack, which is a fucking brilliant name. But they're a good band.
Hard.
Very heavy, very evil. Their record's called Primeval Onslaught. Elsewhere, Scar Symmetry have come back with the Singularity Phase 2 Zenotaph. Phase 1, I believe, came out in 2014, so the most protracted pairing of albums that you probably don't need has ever been. Never really been interested in Scar Symmetry.
I saw them once at Bloodstock. They were all right.
Yeah,
alive,
just,
you know,
very okay European metal, but you know they are back. In hardcore, there's Gelled, which is like gel but with a D on the end. It's to get even more fucking confused about all the hardcore one-word names around. But this is on Relapse Records, and I checked a bit out, and it sounds really like hyper-aggressive and gnarly. The record is called Currency/Castration. For some kind of slightly experimentally, you know, heavier, sludgy stuff, there's a band called Johnny the Boy, and an album I think is just called You. More psychedelic, you know, stonery fare. There's Black Rainbows, Super Skull, and a couple of EPs. Super Bloom, Life's a Blur, who are one of the better kind of, you know, sort of grungy alternative rock bands around.
Really liked that album from, was it last year or
two years ago?
Time is a Blur.
This
like,
EP,
yeah.
I thought this EP has like quite a lot of tracks on it. They're just, you know, short tracks, so there might be a decent helping of Super Bloom to check out. And also an EP from Glass Casket, who are like a deathcore band, not one of the newer deathcore bands, but a returning deathcore band from many a year ago, with an EP that they have got out as well. So check those out. That's it from us this time. Next week there may not be a Hyper Blasts. What we are hopefully going to have is a download review episode. We will have to talk to Elliot when he gets back about when he can do it, but that is what we are aiming to have come your way next, which is exciting because we haven't done a download episode every single year of late, but it's lovely to get to do that for, you know, the biggest event ever, the 20th anniversary show.
Hear all about Metallica.
Twice, you know, that feels right if they are ever able to get out of the car park queues and make it back to us. So we've been That's Not Metal. We'll see you soon.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.